Hello, this is Alton Banks from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is graciously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Gardner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. As usual, at the beginning of the program, we turn to the biz page of this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading, "This Kid Rocks," comes the article, "Carry Girl Goes Global with PowerPoint Skills." Many employers are familiar with a job applicant claiming they are proficient with PowerPoint, but only one Triangle student brought home an Olympic medal for it. Ashlyn Dumas, a 16-year-old at Green Hope High School, brought home the bronze medal from the Microsoft Office Specialist World Championship in New York. She was named the U.S. champion during a competition last summer. Her latest laurel comes from a competition between 155 international students, which earned her $1,500, an array of other prizes, and a permanent bragging right on her resume. The event pitted competitors against each other to create unique project-based tests to demonstrate their ability to create documents, spreadsheets, and presentations. The annual event is in its 18th year. The first place winner in each category or program received $7,000. And under the heading of "Check Your Listing" comes the article, "Good News, There's Plenty of Football on Local Air." Local broadcasters have carried the ACC games for years, and sure enough, if you turn to WRAL August 31st, you'll see plenty of football. Yep, English football. WRAL will be showing the Premier League clash between Burnley and Liverpool. Meanwhile, the ACC's college football games are shifting to a mix of ESPN and the new ACC network. So, NC State University's home football game with East Carolina University August 31st will be broadcast on the ACC network. The issue on whether you can see the game becomes whether you subscribe to services that carry the ACC network. Either way, it's a reminder that the days when the ACC worked hand-in-hand with local broadcasters have sailed with the pilot. And under the heading of "Beefing Up" comes the article, "New Planes Fly Back to Triangle." Blue Line Aviation, which will soon break ground on a pilot training complex at the Johnston County Airport, just secured two new Diamond DA-40 NG aircraft. Pilots picked up the planes at Diamond Aircraft Industries factory in London, Ontario, and flew them to their new home in the Triangle. The new planes give Blue Line Aviation a total of five DA-40 NGs, along with four DA-20s, two DA-42s, and two Cessna 172 JTAs. The firm expects to add one more DA-40 NG by the end of the year. According to the Boeing Pilot and Technician Outlook, the aviation industry will need 804,000 pilots worldwide over the next 20 years. And under the heading of "Travel" comes the article, "Getting to the Big Easy is Pretty Easy Out of RDU." Here at Biz, we're all for having an adventure. So it's encouraging to see more flights out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport as Frontier Airlines just announced a new flight to Newark, New Jersey next spring. That means RDU will have three airlines that fly to Newark, in addition to three airlines flying to New York Kennedy and two to New York LaGuardia. By comparison, five airlines have direct flights to New Orleans. The cities served by four direct flights are Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Chicago, Cancun, Mexico, and Boston. And under the heading "Big Shift," here's the article, "Highwoods Properties Says See Ya to the Triad." Highwoods Properties of Raleigh is pulling out of both Greensboro and Memphis, Tennessee, as it funds a big move into Charlotte. Size is a major reason, according to Brendan Majoriana, Highwoods Executive Vice President of Finance. Majoriana says Greensboro and Memphis are the smallest of the nine markets where Highwoods has portfolios. Plus, the Greensboro portfolio is the only one with industrial space. The others are entirely office buildings. With our focus on office over the years, we felt this was a good time to sell our industrial pieces, says Majorana. We only had a small portion of office in Greensboro. Highwoods has agreed to pay $436 million for Charlotte's new Bank of America Tower, a splashy re-entry to North Carolina's largest market. Highwoods' other portfolios are in Atlanta, Nashville, Tennessee, Orlando, Florida, Pittsburgh, Raleigh, Richmond, Virginia, and Tampa. Majorana said the perceived strength of the Greensboro economy isn't a factor. I think the economic cycle in Greensboro is about the same as in Charlotte and Raleigh. It's much more attributable to scale and mix, he says. And finally, on the biz page of this week's journal comes the article, Egg Business Gets a Bump as Schools Are Back in Session. Parents across North Carolina rejoiced this week as children returned to school. And so, too, did egg producers such as Braswell Family Farms of Nash County. The company's been in business since 1943 and supplies many of the eggs you find in Triangle supermarkets and around the region all the way into Pennsylvania. As with any business, there are predictable cycles, and egg sales start to rise when schools are back in session. Trey Braswell, the company's fourth-generation president, says summer's the slowest part of the egg business, a time when parents are less focused on healthy foods. When the kids get back in school, parents remember how important it is that kids eat a good diet, he says. And that surge continues through the holidays as the November and December combine for 19% of annual volume. Braswell Family Farms, with 225 employees, is especially seeing a rise in sales of specialty eggs. In 2014, specialty eggs were only 44% of Braswell Family Farms' total egg business, but that rose to 65% by 2018. I remember in 1990, specialty eggs were 0 or 1% of the egg sales, Braswell says. He says these eggs can be lower in saturated fat, have more vitamins, and come from chickens with much more range to roam. Of course, all that drives up the price. A regular dozen eggs might cost around $2, while the most expensive eggs can cost $6. Especially in a strong economy, consumers are more willing to pay more for value-added eggs. But even the Great Recession, Braswell says, sales of eggs overall remained steady. Eggs are not a luxury item, Braswell says. They are kind of a staple. And as usual, next we'll turn to the finance and transportation page of the journal. And under the heading of rail service comes the article, NCDOT Can Improve Raleigh to Charlotte Rail. Jason Orthner, director of the North Carolina Department of Transportation's rail division, is celebrating a huge win for the state. North Carolina has been awarded a $77 million federal grant to upgrade its passenger rail service. Using the federal funds, NCDOT may finally be able to offer the experience Raleigh to Charlotte travelers are looking for, as the grant allows for the purchase of a new fleet of coach cars. We've been working incrementally to develop our passenger rail program over several years, including trains, increasing frequencies, with the goal of having it be realized as an important travel option for those traveling in our most congested corridors, Orthner says. A lot of our original equipment was put in service 25 years ago, and even before that, some of our original car bodies, they date back to the 60s, he says. With new cars comes modern equipment and modern interiors that really are going to make the passenger's experience much more comfortable, Orthner says. Including this award, NCDOT's rail division has received nearly $143 million since 2018 in competitive federal grant funding to support its rail programs. And under the heading of Numbers Rising, the article, Why More Travelers Are Using RDU as a Hub. As the nonstop offerings increase at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, more passengers are treating the midsize airport as a hub. That's according to recent numbers out of the RDU Airport Authority, which show a sizable uptick in connecting flights as low-cost carriers, notably Denver-based Frontier Airlines, add to their RDU networks. But more connections can bring more challenges. Connecting passengers have a tendency to spend more, meaning that to tap into that opportunity, an airport must make sure its amenities keep up. For the month of July, nearly 30,000 passengers boarded connecting flights at RDU, the numbers show. Compare that to just over 2,200 a year ago. For the calendar year to date, the figure is more than 47,000 passengers boarding connections. That's a 209% increase from the 15,200 reported last year. It's a structural change for RDU, notes William Swelbar, chief industry strategist for Delta Airport Consultants. While he falls short of calling RDU a hub, he says that given the number of cities that ultra-low-cost carriers have added, we shouldn't be surprised at the level of connectivity that's occurring today. He gives RDU credit for working to accommodate the shift, such as its plan to move low-cost carriers to Terminal 1 to create a budget terminal. That's good forward thinking by the airport. Appreciating the product that they offer needs to change with the changing marketplace, he says. Swelbar says the connection increase really comes down to growth, and he doesn't see that slowing at RDU. With every flight that's added, you create multiple opportunities to connect to a new point, he says. That's particularly evident with Frontier, the airport's fastest growing carrier, as well as the airline with the most nonstop destinations out of RDU. Through July, RDU had boarded more than 291,000 passengers on Frontier planes, a 69% increase over last year. And under the heading of Finding Cash comes the article Holcomb's New Project, a Venture Capital Fund. 5 years after the sale of Strike Iron, its founder has a new project. Richard Holcomb has started a new investment vehicle to be called the North Carolina Venture Capital Fund. Holcomb, speaking by phone from his Hillsborough farm, says the financing arena has changed, particularly when it comes to early stage capital. We started Strike Iron in 2002. We sold it in 2014 for about $55 million, he recalls. That was a good return for the employees and the investors. But it wouldn't have happened if Aurora hadn't written us a $250,000 check to get that idea off the ground. And that's what seems to be missing. While the older players, Aurora Ventures and InterSouth Partners, still exist, they're not writing checks for early-stage companies, a gap he hopes the North Carolina Venture Capital Fund, targeted to be $25 million, can fill. There's this whole new set of really smart, passionate entrepreneurs, he says. They have great ideas. It looks like they could execute on the ideas, but they don't have the money. So Holcomb is pounding the pavement, looking for investors for the new fund, which has a $10 million minimum. As for companies, it will be triangle-focused and primarily technology firms, though healthcare technology could also be part of the portfolio. So far, Holcomb has identified a half a dozen potential startups, but says it's premature to do more due diligence without financing commitments. And finally, on the finance and transportation page of this week's journal comes the article, Wells Fargo Leaders Confident as Competition Stiffens. From recession possibilities to new competitors, market executives at the region's biggest bank by deposits say they're not worried. Wells Fargo's John Ward, a senior vice president in charge of commercial banking in the Triangle, and Mike Golden, the bank's Raleigh regional president, believe nothing is going to derail the California bank anytime soon in the region. They are not affecting our plan, Ward says, of new competitors such as J.P. Morgan Chase. I think if the Triangle continues to grow and prosper, we'll continue to see competition. Calling the Triangle a priority market, he says competition is welcome and an opportunity for all banks to step up their games. Golden, market leader for the past 2 years, says Wells Fargo's history brings a big competitive advantage. He points to a Cameron Village location with an 80-year history of serving the city, as well as a presence of 2,500 employees in the area. Over those many years, We've commanded number one market share, and we continue to grow, Golden says. It's no surprise that competitors want to come here. As for Wells Fargo's operations here, all is well, Golden says. The local Wells Fargo team continues to be a pace setter, with the lowest turnover rate seen in its local history, he says. Next, we turn to the healthcare and education page of this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of lung disease comes the article, New UNC Report Provides Warning About Vaping. When it comes to e-cigarettes, new research finds it isn't just blowing smoke. A new study out of UNC Chapel Hill links vaping with lung disease caused by traditional smoking, a pushback to the common thought that vaping is safer than smoking. Researchers at the University School of Medicine have linked e-cigarettes with the same cellular response found in smokers with emphysema. It's a warning sign in the evolving body of scientific work on the cultural phenomenon of vaping. The lead author of the study, Robert Taran, a UNC professor of cell biology and physiology and member of the Marsico Lung Institute, says the results came from a $20 million research grant originally directed at hookahs and other non-cigarette tobacco products. However, with the rapid explosion in e-cigarette use, researchers felt the need to change focus. The results of the research, he says, are a stark indication vaping is not something to be taken lightly. From the lung perspective, I have yet to see any data to say it is safer than smoking, he says. Taran notes that just because vaping has not yet been linked to other negative outcomes, it does not mean that the effects are not there. And under the heading of portfolio expansion comes the article, Liquidia Seeks Partner as Launch Nears. A Marshall-based drug developer with a late-stage asset is on the market looking for a partner, a potentially lucrative opportunity. According to its chief financial officer, Liquidia Technologies is pushing discussions with potential partners ahead of its new drug application, or NDA, it plans to file at the end of this year. What I can tell you is that any company, us or anyone else, that's looking to launch a drug, there's a significant investment involved, says CFO Richard Ketz. That is certainly why we're pursuing partnership discussions. Liquidia expects to file the NDA for its lead drug, LIQ-861, a treatment for pulmonary arterial hypertension, by the end of this year, with commercialization coming soon after. In addition to LIQ-861, the company also has another drug, LIQ-865, heading toward a Phase 2 trial. According to the company's most recent quarterly report, Liquidia has $52.1 million in cash, which Katz says should take the company into second quarter 2020. In the meantime, the company is looking for more non-dilutive financing, a goal characterized as very achievable. Katz says the ideal partner would be involved beyond just commercialization efforts following their drug approval. We would certainly envision the partner helping in the commercialization effort, also potentially in ongoing development efforts, he says. In addition to the company's two existing drug candidates, Liquidia announced an expanded collaboration agreement with GSK, providing the rights to develop additional therapeutics using Liquidia's PRINT particle manufacturing platform. Katz says the company is still evaluating the options and has not yet made a determination of when or what therapeutics it hopes to advance. He says with the 12 to 18 months between advancing a program and bringing it into clinical trials, the company remains focused on its lead candidates. And under the heading of development comes the article, Charter School to Join Wendell Falls Community. A community in eastern Wake County is partnering with a charter school in an effort to attract families to the area. Cardinal Charter Academy of Cary has announced a new location in the Wendell Falls development. The school is scheduled to begin construction in the coming months and is expected to open by next August. Cardinal will serve kindergarten through eighth grade, and developers hope it will be another incentive for residents to settle in the community east of Knightdale. Dan Klausner, director of development for Wendell Voles, and its master developer, Newland, says bringing high-quality education into the site was a necessity. We go into green areas because that's the only way you can get that type of acreage in one spot, he says. When you do that, schools are always a challenge you have to overcome. Klausner says the development chose to partner with Cardinal because of its reputation for high-quality education. They want to be in a growing neighborhood, and we want to bring in options for our residents and bring in people who we think are considering Wendell Falls, he says. Charter schools are publicly funded private schools. As of last year, nearly 200 charter schools were operating across the state. When fully enrolled, Cardinal will accommodate 765 students with approximately 45 staff and faculty members. Another school, Lake Myra Elementary, currently serves the community. Now we turn to the real estate page from this week's Triangle Business Journal. And under the heading of new location comes the article, Restaurant Chain Plans Another Triangle Location. A Wisconsin-based chain serving burgers and shakes plans to add a fourth location in the Triangle. Site plans are in review for a new Culver's at 1860 Cinema Drive off North Main Street in fast-developing Fuquay Farina. The quick-service, family-style restaurant chain specializes in burgers, frozen custard shakes, and Wisconsin-style cheese curds. Plans submitted to the town include a 4,330-square-foot restaurant with 57 parking spaces across 1.3 acres. Culver's currently has locations in Wake Forest and Clayton, with plans to open another location in Apex. The chain currently has fewer than 10 locations across North Carolina. The company was founded in Wisconsin in the mid-1980s and has more than 700 locations, primarily in the Midwest. And under the heading of Hunting for Business comes the article, D.C. developer Hoffman & Associates to open Raleigh office. The real estate firm behind a major redevelopment proposed for a downtown Raleigh has announced plans to open an office in the city. Hoffman & Associates, formerly P.N. Hoffman, announced on August the 26th it will expand beyond Washington, D.C. and into the Triangle. Situated at 11 West Franklin Street, the office will be the company's first location outside of the nation's capital. Hoffman & Associates' expansion will be anchored by its proposed Seaboard Station mixed-use development. The company purchased the 7-acre property in 2018 for $34 million. The company said it plans to open the Raleigh office this fall. We are entering an exciting new chapter in our company's history with our expansion outside the greater D.C. area, along with building of large-scale communities across different markets, says Monty Hoffman, founder and CEO of Hoffman & Associates. In a release, Hoffman says, Hoffman & Associates illustrates how we, as a company, lead by building to better serve our communities. The company has submitted plans for the first phase of the Seaboard Station redevelopment, which calls for 311,400 square feet of mixed-use space, with 96 apartments, 150 hotel rooms, and around 10,300 square feet of restaurant and retail space. There will be three phases in all, totaling 800,000 square feet and around $250 million invested. The company has developed high-end mixed-use and residential buildings throughout Washington, including a $2.5 billion waterfront development south of the National Mall known as The Wharf. Seaboard Station is the company's first project outside of D.C. The location is superb, Hoffman said last year. We love the composition of uses that we can put on here. We're really a neighborhood transformation type developer. This will allow us to build a community and connect into other communities. P. and Hoffman is shedding the initials of co-founder Pete Nazelrod as the developer looks to make a name for itself outside Greater Washington. Founder and CEO Monty Hoffman told the Washington Business Journal the change is meant to dispense with the inevitable question of what does a PN stand for, as a company looks to expand its footprint in places such as Raleigh. Nazelrod hasn't been a full-time part of the company for more than a decade. And under the heading of land acquisition comes the article, Raleigh Developer Buying Land for Large Mixed-Use Project by Dorothea Diggs Park. A Triangle real estate firm has begun buying up land by Dorothea Diggs Park for what will be a new mixed-use project plan for the South Saunders Corridor. Raleigh's Atlas Stark Holdings has partnered with Asian Ventures to buy over 3 acres at 1008 Hamill Drive with plans to accumulate more. The company's paid $7.8 million for 5 tracks in what's expected to become an active part of the city. Atlas Stark managing partner Gabriel Gilois said, "This is just the beginning of what they plan to be a bigger project. We have enough right now where we could do a development, but we'd like to acquire some more property to do a larger development," Gilois says. "We're looking at it if we could acquire adjacent properties. While it's too early for details," he says, "whatever may come will likely be mixed use, featuring retail, office, and residential space." The property currently contains 50,000 square feet of office space, some of which the company may look to repurpose into office and retail. No timeline has been set, and no word on whether a rezoning request will have to be made. The property is currently zoned to accommodate development up to 3 stories. As the area continues to develop, Gilois says the property will be in the perfect position to capitalize on the growth. "You can walk to the amphitheater in 5 minutes," he says. And obviously, the Dorothea Diggs Park, with 300,000 acres, is going to be a huge draw to the city. And finally, from the real estate page, under the heading of Accolade, comes the article, "Real Estate Market in Raleigh is Among the Best in the Country," report says. As homeowners across the country face higher home prices in an increasingly competitive market, Raleigh's among the top 10 cities with the best real estate markets, according to WalletHub. The report ranked 2019's best real estate markets, comparing the nation's top cities for affordability, job population growth, and more. Raleigh ranked 10th among large cities. WalletHub factored in 23 relevant metrics each, with a 100-point scale to give each city a score. These metrics include home value forecast, home price appreciation, days on market, foreclosure and vacancy rates, affordability, and others. Altogether, Raleigh scores 64.41, better than Atlanta and just behind Seattle. Austin came in at number 1. Out of all cities analyzed in the report, Raleigh came in at 37th, with good marks for population growth, job growth, average days on market, and number of REOs. A recent study also found Raleigh ranks in the middle among the country's 75 biggest cities when it comes to living expenses. Next, we turn to the restaurants and retail page, and we find under the heading of Renovated Lounge the article, "Downtown Raleigh Restaurant Revamps Its Upstairs Lounge." And what could be best described as Alice in Wonderland meets Your Father's Hunting Lodge, Pizza La Stella's owner, Rudy Thiel, has high hopes for what he's coining the loft in the upstairs of his wood-fired restaurant. Located on Fayetteville Street in Raleigh, Pizza La Stella has been around for a little more than 3 years, but is giving its upstairs a $60,000 makeover. "The loft's concept will be a craft cocktail bar," says Thiel. "The upstairs, which is still going through minor renovations, is an eclectic assortment of historic estate sale furniture combined with decor such as mounted deer heads on the wall wearing vintage style gas masks. Akin to Ashley Christensen's Fox Liquor Lounge, instead of taking a side entrance down into the basement with the loft, guests will take the side entrance up a flight of stairs to their destination. We have a very popular bartender from the Wake County area, and he'll be creating pop-up events here with his own special twist," says Thiel. Pizza La Stella's owner isn't quite ready to reveal the mixologist, but says he'll be bringing in a team of his own to give the loft a unique vibe. Thiel is hoping that in roughly 6 weeks, the upstairs lounge will be in full swing, and then one can expect specialty crafted cocktails, as well as items such as bourbon flights and local beer and wines from around the world. "We also have someone on board who runs a wine bar in the area as well," he says. And under the heading of Sipping Coffee comes the article, Author to Open Shop in Rocky Mount Mills. A new coffee shop slash bookstore will open this October inside Rocky Mount Mills. The business, dubbed Books and Beans, is the vision of New York Times best-selling author Atoff Rum, who also co-owns the Barley and Burger in Rocky Mount. The coffee shop will serve locally roasted coffee from Durham's counterculture, as well as fresh baked treats and lunch items. Rum, a graduate of NC State University whose debut book was A Woman Is No Man, will curate the selection of books inside Books and Beans, which will also feature visiting authors. I'm excited to share my love of storytelling and great coffee with locals and visitors alike, Rum says. My hope is that Books and Beans becomes a place for people to gather, to share ideas, and to celebrate the transformative power of books. Having a coffee shop and bookstore concept offers a new space for folks to not only work and relax, but also to connect with each other and be inspired, says Evan Covington, real estate development manager with Rocky Mount Mills. Rum Shop will add to a collective of craft breweries, restaurants, and office space that currently fills the Rocky Mount Mills, which is owned by Raleigh's Capital Broadcasting. Next, we turn to this week's cover story, which is entitled How Fuquay Barina Became the Triangle's Next Hotspot. Steve Ashworth remembers Fuquay Barina as just a tiny town, unrecognizable from where it is today. Growing up here, there were maybe 5,000 people around here, he says. It had maybe 2 stoplights, 3 stoplights. You rode your bicycle everywhere. Those days are gone, as the town in the southeastern corner of Wake County is one of the fastest growing in the state. Recent decades have seen Fuquay Barina explode with growth. Streets lined with trees and country homes soon found themselves surrounded by new subdivisions and shopping centers as thousands of new residents streamed into town each year. Ashworth has had a front row seat for the change. He owns Ashworth Clothing, a downtown Fuquay Barina store his grandfather founded in 1937. He started when he was 9 years old. At that age, you're not working full-time, Ashworth says. 50 years later, he's seen the early days of retail and restaurant chains coming in the 1980s and 90s, followed by the population boom in the last decade or so. The town currently has over 9,140 residential units planned or under construction, a remarkable number that matches the population of the town less than 2 decades ago. Building permit statistics show that 2018 was the most active in the town's history. But changes aside, Ashworth maintains the town has kept its charm, with many local businesses still booming and residents maintaining the neighbor-help-neighbor feel. You still have what I call the Mayberry effect, he says. It's never lost that sense of community. But no one ever put 400 new homes next to Aunt B's place, and parking was never a problem in front of Floyd's Barbershop. So whether Fuquay Barina can keep maintaining that charm is still an open question. Essentially, the Triangle's rapid expansion has moved in concentric circles from Raleigh, seeing towns such as Garner, Cary, Apex, Holly Springs, Wake Forest, and Knightdale explode. As those towns filled in, the farms and countryside around Fuquay Barina became prime targets for developers, who could buy land cheaper and thus hit price points that were highly appealing in a county where home prices are soaring. And years before the biggest waves hit, Fuquay Barina officials were watching and planning. What we've done here is to try to plan as much as we can for the growth that's headed our way, says John Byrne, who has been the mayor of Fuquay Barina for 18 years. We know what's coming. Byrne moved to Fuquay Barina more than 4 decades ago, when the town contained just a few thousand people. In that time, the town has grown from nearly 9,000 in 2001 to around 30,000 today. Even with that growth, Byrne has his sights set to future waves of boom and development. You don't want to overdevelop, he says, but what you do want to do is develop something that you'll be proud of for years to come. We're setting the stage for what our town will be like for the next 50 years. This latest stretch of growth began with the expansion of Interstate 540 in 2012. Suddenly, what once were lengthy and frustrating commutes were suddenly cut in half, opening swaths of undeveloped land in Fuquay Varina to the interest of the developers fed up with the scarce and expensive land in the rest of the county. Home sales went from 610 in 2012 to 1,411 in 2017, according to MLS data collected by Bo Brumhall, real estate agent at Berkshire Hathaway. Fuquay Varina more than doubled, 131% growth, in homes sold from the low point of 2012 through 2017, and has leveled off since, Brumhall says. Wake County sales grew 75% during that time. Meanwhile, all that activity is translated into soaring property values as demand continues to outstrip supply. In 2012, new homes sold for $212,000. Today, new units go for around $358,000. Resold homes have seen a similar bump, shooting up from $191,000 then to $289,000 today. Back in 2012, there was a large gap between the average price in Fuquay Varina and the rest of the Triangle, Brumhall says. Still, there's an appeal to staying in Wake County, he says, as residents have access to the Wake County public schools, and Fuquay Varina remains affordable by Wake County standards. But that cost gap is closing, and more residents are coming as highway projects continue. We're going to have five exchanges that come off 540 that come off of Fuquay Varina, Byrne says. That's pretty significant. 540 is kind of a game changer. To Carolyn Clary, who moved from Saratoga, New York, to Willow Spring, a community under Fuquay Varina's jurisdiction, the town's infrastructure may already be showing its strains. Traffic, especially this strip right here, Clary says, while having breakfast at Eggs Up Grill off North Main Street, and there's construction on every street. Access to large urban centers comes at a price. And town officials say they're working hard to keep the town's infrastructure up to speed. The biggest project to that end is the construction of Judd Parkway, a road that, when finished, will encircle the small town to maximize access throughout Fuquay Varina. The single most important thing we can do is Judd Parkway, Byrne says. It gives you a centralized location to get around the core area of the town in a timely fashion. That will be the envy of all other municipalities of Wake County. Already, the town has poured $25 million into the new road, spurred on by consultants who find this to be the most important public project in town. That's where perhaps some more dense development should occur, Mitchell says. Work has already begun on the road, and the sections that are complete have seen added interest from developers. When it's completed in 2021, Fuquay Varina will essentially have its own beltline. In addition to its road improvement and construction projects, the town has been investing in infrastructure, including a $34 million sewer plant expansion project and high-speed internet. We put a lot of focus on our infrastructure and planning for the future, Byrne says. This includes plans to attract more commercial development as the town is largely dependent on residential tax revenue to fund its programs and expenses. Town manager Adam Mitchell says staff and officials have been putting policies in place to better work with commercial developers and to invest in ways to court commercial development opportunities. One of the things our town did a couple of years ago was invest in property, he says. The town bought 35 acres of land in the industrial sector of our community to market it for business development opportunities. Fuquay Varina has also allowed for form development in certain areas and has encouraged developers to pursue a variety of projects from mixed use to multifamily and more. Rick Rojas, the Raleigh Division President of Meritage Homes, says, since the I-540 expansion, Fuquay Varina has been an attractive place to invest. It's a great town to go in and find some land to develop, Rojas says. It's just the quality of schools and the fact that the government there has really invested in its town is very proud of its town. Perhaps one of the most dramatic changes planned for Fuquay Varina is a planned expansion of its extraterritorial jurisdiction, or ETJ, which could double the town in size over the next few decades. This is different from Fuquay Varina's municipal boundary. The district encompasses the areas directly outside of the corporate borders. Like other towns in Wake County and across the state, properties inside of extraterritorial jurisdiction don't have to pay municipal taxes, but are subject to the town's planning and zoning regulations. Properties in the district can be annexed into the town's limits if that property's owner requests the town do so, something town officials believe will ultimately happen throughout the district. The ETJ is nothing more than an indicator of where the city limits will eventually be, Mitchell says. Officials requested the town's ETJ be extended by about 22,000 acres. Upon review, the county is expected to grant around 11,000 acres now, with the rest to be approved at a later date. Current town limits is 17.2 square miles, Mitchell says. Our current ETJ is 13 square miles. And if the Wake County Commissioners approve, it will add another 18.5 square miles to our planning jurisdiction. This was all made possible by the town's growing population, with communities of over 25,000 eligible to request the ETJ expansion. Census data found the town's population exceeded 28,000 last year. The county is holding a public hearing in early September and will make its decision by the middle of the month. Burns says the expansion will allow the town to guide development in areas that are near town but currently outside the reach of its planning regulations. You've got 540 going through up there just north of Wake Tech. All that will be in Fuquay Verena's domain, he says. We have to plan to take care of this stuff. Local businessman Barney Fish says the change overall has been good for Fuquay Verena. Fish owns Elmo's Clothing, a store that opened its doors in 1911 on the same location on South Main Street. He says change to the sleepy town were inevitable. Growth is good, he says. There's a lot more stuff to do in the area than we used to have. Used to be Friday night football was the biggest thing happening here. Visit the downtown districts in town these days, and you'll see business of all sizes and ages, from new restaurants and retailers to local businesses dating back a century. Along with the venerable establishments are trendy coffee shops, breweries, restaurants, antique shops, and more. Fuquay Verena is a great business town. It's a very progressive business community, Ashworth says. You look at the emerging businesses here. We have a lot of entrepreneurs here that are finding there's a good, steady population. The town website lists dozens of new commercial projects coming to town. This includes a mixed-use project headed just north of downtown Fuquay Verena. Plans call for up to 5 stories, including townhomes, office, and retail space. And as the town continues to change amid new and innovative commercial development, some storied town businesses are closing down. Even Elliott's Pharmacy closed in 2013 after 99 years in business, unable to keep pace with the fresh waves of competition. There's not a lot of us left, Fish says. I know several I didn't think would ever close. For his part, Fish says Elmo's will likely end when he retires. I'm the third generation, he says. Man, I'll probably be the last. Next, we turn to the executive voice, and this week's executive voice belongs to Judith Kelly. Each year, thousands of new students arrive on Duke University's campus harboring ambitions and dreams of wealth, influence, and making the world a better place. For many of them, classes at Duke's Sanford School of Public Policy, named for former Governor and Duke President Terry Sanford, provides exposure to how they can make a difference. The school hosts one of the largest cohort of undergraduate students at the university, as well as a robust graduate program. Just over a year ago, Judith Kelly, the school's former senior associate dean, was tapped as its head. She says that though the role has demanded more of her time and energy, thinking on the endless potential the school's faculty and students could have on the planet is more than enough peace of mind. So here's the Q&A format. What drives students to pursue public policy education? What happens in the immediate future is usually affected by what happens in the economy. But overall, I feel like the younger generation is very civic-minded and eager to get engaged in social issues. In some ways, and for a certain segment of the population, I feel like a public policy education today is like a new business degree. They want the same set of skills, but they want also to have a grounding in the social issues they care about and want to study together with a cohort of students who are engaged in the same issues and are passionate about making a difference. So will rising interest in politics help or hurt schools such as yours? It can pull both ways, and it's too soon to say. It could be that some younger people get turned off from wanting to engage in politics when they see a lot of polarization, or they're not enthusiastic about what's going on in our government. On the other hand, I'm pretty optimistic. I have college-age kids myself, and I believe in the next generation, and that they care about these issues and will continue to want to get involved in them. So what are your priorities as dean? Because we want our students to make a difference in the world, it's vital that they don't leave with a lot of debt. We have to find ways to either create more scholarship opportunities or lower the cost and make it more accessible. So what does Sanford add to Duke's larger presence? Society today demands that institutions of higher education are relevant, not only that they provide relevant skills, but they engage with the world around them. Policy schools are particularly good at doing that, and at Sanford, that's something we take very seriously. So what do you hope your students learn at Sanford? Public policy actually got started as an undergraduate major at Duke. Most public policy schools are professional schools, but we actually educate far more undergraduate students than we educate professional students. We're easily one of the biggest majors at Duke and graduate more than 200 students a year. For the undergraduate student, they come to us as a liberal arts student, and we don't necessarily need to send them away with a set of really hard skills. But what we really want to send them away with is an understanding of history and ethics. We want them to be civic-minded, to think about how the enterprise they're engaged in may affect those around them, and how they can bring their activities to bear on the greater good. And finally, what's the best piece of advice you've received? Answer: an alumnus of ours, Michael Sorrell, who's now president of Paul Quinn College, has given me two pieces of advice that I treasure. It's often easy to focus on the things you don't have. We want more resources, more buildings, and more this and that. Michael always says, focus on your assets. That's a very wise piece of advice, because it keeps you in a positive frame of mind, and because your assets are what you have. They're what you can do something with. The other is, it's important to lead with love and care about the people around you, to be mindful about how your decisions affect other people. And as we near the end of today's broadcast, we come to the Finance and Transportation page once again and find the heading, He Said It, a comment by Sean O'Leary regarding Richard Holcomb, about whom we read earlier in the broadcast. O'Leary says, as former CEO in StrikeIron and now CEO of FoodLogic IQ, he says that if anyone can make an impact, it's Richard Holcomb. Richard's a pioneer and legend in the NC startup ecosystem, a true modern-day Renaissance man, from software programmer to tech entrepreneur to tech investor to farmer to restaurateur. Richard not only is a get-stuff-done type of guy, he's a get-anything-done-he-sets-his-mind-to type of guy. Personally, he was extremely helpful to me at StrikeIron, which was my first time in the role of CEO. The success we both had from that venture has propelled me to the multiple successes I've had since. Even after sitting in the CEO seat 5 times, I still seek his guidance from time to time. I'm a big fan and proud to have him as a friend. Next, we turn to the viewpoint page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and the guest column this week is written by David Garrett. Garrett specializes in helping foreign companies manage direct investment in the U.S., He serves as a counsel for Nexen Pruett, which has offices across the Carolinas. And his article is entitled, Let's Not Push Business Away from the State. Employees are a company's most important asset. While it's getting easier for firms to identify the right people for critical roles, companies attempting to bring essential employees to the U.S. are experiencing increased difficulty in obtaining visas for them. Far from protecting the native workforce, this development hurts American workers. When companies are unable to bring employees to this country, they consider leaving. Machinery can be shipped and new facilities can be built with relative ease. But if necessary personnel are prevented from obtaining visas, a company won't locate here. foreign companies helped fuel the economies of the Triangle region and our state. In 2016, foreign employers provided jobs for more than 260,400 workers in North Carolina and for more than 7 million workers across the U.S. Raising the barriers between foreign companies and visas could impact North Carolina especially hard. Companies' increasing difficulty in obtaining visas seems to stem from a distinction between what is legally required of visa applicants and what the government actually expects. Visa eligibility decisions are made by the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, called USCIS. When a company applies for a visa for a foreign worker, the company bears the burden of establishing eligibility. The standard of proof that's supposed to be applied on visas is the preponderance of the evidence standard, where if the company submits relevant, probative, and credible evidence that leads the director of USCIS to believe that the claim is probably true or more likely than not to be true, the standard is considered satisfied. More likely than not, according to USCIS, means only that the probability of something occurring exceeds 50%. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt, conversely, requires a higher degree of certainty. By a preponderance of the evidence, is in no way equivalent to proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Yet as important visa classifications are stymied by increasing demands for proof, it seems the USCIS has substituted one for the other. To establish eligibility for a visa, foreign employers and employees go through an extensive process. For example, for an L visa, a classification for intracompany transfers of managers, supervisors, and executives, as well as for employees with specialized or advanced knowledge, an application must include evidence of a qualifying relationship, descriptions of job duties and qualifications, and evidence that proposed employment is an executive, managerial, or specialized knowledge capacity, among other requirements. Even when eligibility is decided based on a preponderance of the evidence standard, these applications are difficult. Obtaining and translating documents that demonstrate relevant training, education, and job experience can be expensive and time-consuming. When eligibility is determined by proof beyond a reasonable doubt, however, it's practically impossible for foreign companies to put together a successful application. Published requirements like latitude for the applicant to manage an essential function of the organization at a high level without direct supervision of others are difficult enough to prove, but with an L-1A visa, USCIS appears to maintain new, unpublished expectations, like the expectation that applicants work within a highly insulated management structure. Executives and managers, by USCIS's account, should have almost no frontline supervisory duties. To qualify for an L-1A visa, applicants are expected to prove that each manager or supervisor the applicant supervised is a professional who holds either a bachelor's degree or a combination of degrees and experience in a profession that requires at least the equivalent of a bachelor's degree. The proof doesn't end there. For each of these supervised professionals, the applicant must provide extremely detailed job descriptions to prove that menial tasks are not being performed. This demand for information about foreign staff can cause its own set of problems. Privacy laws in other countries often prohibit employers from releasing information that USCIS has come to expect. Requiring microscopic levels of detail and mountains of documents to establish the legitimacy of a visa application is not the intention of Congress. America is effectively becoming closed for business for foreign-owned companies, and the consequences will be borne by American workers. Visa reform is a critical issue for North Carolina. When we cut off a company's access to key personnel, we discourage continued investment and invite international companies in the Triangle to look elsewhere. This week's editor's notebook is entitled Rise of the Rest of the Triangle is Promising. In recent months, I've noticed a sharp increase in economic development activity in our neighboring counties, the ones not called Wake, Durham, or Orange. Sure, Wake and Durham counties have had their share of success this year. Xerox, Merck, ABB, Parexel, Selectus, and Avexis are among many others. But after reading last week's story on India's Kalyani Group considering Lee County for an auto parts manufacturing operation, it hit me. Maybe things are becoming so rich in Wake and Durham counties that a new manufacturing operation may have become cost prohibitive. Recently, Clean Air announced it will add 305 jobs in Wilson County. Broad River Retail announced 161 jobs coming to Johnston County. And Cryogen Pharmaceuticals probably voiced the addition of 100 new jobs at a plant in Harnett County. For these manufacturers, especially the companies based outside the U.S., currency plays a critical role. A stronger dollar often makes the math complicated as companies look to defray the capital costs but not compromise on the available labor pool. Getting some of these counties in the mix to spur economic development is great for the Triangle, but it also reflects the shortcomings of our lawmakers when it comes to infrastructure, transportation, and commercial development planning. Are we really addressing the challenges facing Wake, Durham, and Orange? We fail to resolve what transportation economists consider the simplest of tests, approval of the 17-mile Durham-Orange County rail line. Also, from what we are hearing, the NC Department of Transportation may put new road projects on hold until it feels it has the fiscal ability to finance the work. And that's not to mention we lost the Apple and Amazon projects last year. Yes, we've had several wins since then, as I mentioned, but do we not see the pattern? We're losing the high-profile projects, and the Triangle is becoming a more expensive place to live. Therefore, gnawing away the region's biggest advantage, cost of living, we need a big win. To make these dimensional changes, we need a Jeffrey Vinnick to rekindle our vision. Vinnick may have single-handedly revived Tampa when he and his billionaire friends pledged to pour $3 billion on 50 acres for a development called Water Street Tampa. Maybe our own billionaire SaaS founder Jim Goodnight's real estate arm is envisioning the same thing at Chatham Park. We need our leaders and policymakers to address big issues for Wake, Durham, and Orange counties, not just Airbnb and e-scooter regulations. Certainly looks like our neighboring counties have stepped up their game. We need to do our part to support the greater Triangle region. Well, that music means we've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Angier. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe that every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as a person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. So long till next time.